From the studios of Radio Sai at Prashanthi Nilayam, I am Chandu Vijay and this is Love to Love. And today we have a talk by Dr. Sainath. Dr. Sainath joined the Sri Sathya Sai Institute of Higher Learning for his Bachelor of Sciences in 1985. After completing his Master's in Physics in 1990 with Bhagwan's guidance, he joined for the doctorate program and got his PhD in Nuclear Physics in 1995. And later, he served as a faculty member in the Department of Physics, Sri Sathya Sai Institute of Higher Learning, till 2008. He is currently Dean, Innovation, Incubation and Entrepreneurial Developments at the Rajiv Gandhi University of Knowledge Technologies, Basar, in Telangana. In this talk, Dr. Sainath takes us through myriad of his personal experiences and interactions with Bhagwan. This talk was delivered as a part of the Samarpan series in Brindavan Ashram on the 21st of January 2018. The duration of the talk is about 1 hour 15 minutes, and at the end of the talk, we have some dynamic songs by Dana Gillespie. Stay tuned, dear listeners. At 3:30 p.m., we have the live Telugu segment, Sri Sathya Sai Divya Sandesha Jhari. And with that, over to Dr. Sainath.
Respected elders, sisters and brothers, standing here today brings back several fond memories. I don't know, when Swami was walking on these grounds, I still remember when I went up to take his namaskar, I almost felt he was there patting me on the head like he would several of our speakers. Baga Chippu. Those fond memories keep coming back. And it is not that I have been kind enough to come and share my experiences with you. I want to thank you, my dear brothers, for giving me this opportunity to once again relive those memories and stand before you all to share a few of my experiences. I'd like to begin by mentioning an anecdote that happened between Professor Kasturi and Swami. As we all know, Bhagwan used to make several trips to all over the country, various parts of this country. One of the trips that he made was to the holy land of Varanasi, North India. So Professor Kasturi was one of those people who was selected, and he was told, "Kasturi, get ready, I'm taking you to Varanasi with me." And Professor Kasturi was so thrilled. Now, for all Hindus, you know, Varanasi is one of the holiest of places. You know, it is, it's like a lifetime ambition to go to Varanasi, you know, to be able to have a dip in the holy Ganges, have the darshan of Lord Shiva, visit the temples. It's a very holy land and every Hindu would like to go there. So Professor Kasturi was very excited. He said, "In this holy land of Varanasi, I must get my mantra from the Lord today." So he planned. So he wanted to get a mantra for his spiritual improvement in Varanasi from Swami. So he selected the muhurtam, he selected the tithi, everything, he was ready. And on that day, early in the morning, he even went and had a shivering dip in the Ganges. He didn't have his food. Now at this point, a small deviation. Some of my brothers who would have lived with Swami will know that when we decide, "I am going to do this," you can rest assured that Swami is going to put a brake on it. He'll find a way. The reason is very simple. In fact, I believe some of the time, some of the devotees asked Swami and said, "When we want to do something interesting and something good, why is it, Swami, that we face every kind of obstacle?" And then Swami drew an analogy and he said, "See, when you plant a fruit-giving tree, no fruit-giving tree will come up and grow just like that. Every fruit-giving tree takes a long time to grow. It is your responsibility to guard it against every kind of animals, thieves and other things, protect it. You have to struggle a little bit, all kind of obstacles you have to overcome, and only then one day you will see the tree bloom and you will get the fruits." So manchi sankalpam, that means a good thought when it crosses your mind, God will test you in every way. He will test you in every way basically to see how strong we are, how determined we are to continue with our pursuit. Swami, being the Jagadguru, being her loving mother and father, our guru, everything, he is definitely not going to leave such a chance. So when Professor Kasturi had a shivering dip of bath, he said, I'm going to fast the whole day. I'm going to wait till Swami is going to give me the mantra, and then I'm going to start my prayers. Until then, I'm going to fast. Now begins the drama. Breakfast came, and Swami asked for Professor Kasturi to be made sit next to him. Now this is a tricky situation. How would you escape? Everybody is eating, Swami is eating, Professor Kasturi can't eat. Because he has decided, I'm going to fast. So Swami observed from the corner of his eye, didn't tell anything. So Professor Kasturi fasted. Lunchtime came, still no mantra appeared. Lunchtime also, Swami was sitting, Professor Kasturi was again sitting next to Swami, still no mantra. Again Swami saw that Professor Kasturi was not eating anything, no comments. Dinner time finally came, and Professor Kasturi was fasting still, and this time he was sitting next to Swami, and this time Swami decided to ask, what Kasturi, you are not eating anything. That's why I called it a drama, because you know the way he asks you, it's very easy to assume, ah, Swami doesn't know anything, I have to explain everything to him. It's very easy to make that mistake. We are guilty of that several times. So Professor Kasturi was already distraught, so he was sobbing and he blurted out, Swami, mantra. Then Swami said, what mantra? He said, Swami, mantra, this is the holy land of Varanasi, I have been praying to you to give me the mantra. You have still not given me the mantra. And then Swami looked at him, smiled, and he said, Kasturi, what is the purpose of a mantra? Then Professor Kasturi said, Swami, to get closer to God. Then Swami looked down. You know, Swami's thigh was on Kasturi sir's thigh. They were sitting shoulder to shoulder to each other. And then Swami asked Kasturi, how much closer do you want to get? But in this sentence, there is a very deep meaning. How much closer do you want to get? Now, different people, now Swami is called Jagat Guru. The reason he is called Jagat Guru is because among the millions of people who come to have his darshan, he is capable of maintaining an individual relation with each one of us. Some of us see Swami as a friend. Swami becomes a friend for them. Their plan of action and their sadhana is a different path. Some of us see Swami as our mother. To them, the sadhana path is different. To some, Swami is a father, another different sadhana path. So he maintains a different sadhana path for each one of us, which means if we want to get close to Bhagwan, we first have to visualize a particular relation with him. Now you may ask the question, why is it that a relation is important? Swami was once asked the question, why is it that the avatar always comes in a human form? And Swami very jocularly said, if the avatar would have come, let us say, like an animal, or, you know, like a Sankachakra Gadadhari with four arms and gadha and mace and everything, you would have put me in the museum. You wouldn't know how to relate to me. So if I have to catch your attention, I have to be like one amongst you. Now that's a classic principle which Bhagwan followed all through his avataric mission. He was like us. It did work wonders to many, but it also fooled us many times. Because we'll start believing, you know, he is one amongst us. Like the Yadavas believed Krishna was one amongst them. He was, but he was something much more that they couldn't see. So, when we want to actually get close to Swami, we devise our own strategies and our own techniques and our own paths. And Swami also makes sure that we are on that path as long as we surrender to him. So, if we want to therefore get close to Bhagwan, what is it that we have to do? That's the first question which many of us will be having. I would like to share an incident which happened right here in Tribrindavan. By this time, students would have already known that there was something called as Thrice Sessions which used to take place. Thrice Sessions means, you know, after this Aarti was here, if Swami was in his physical form, in all likelihood, we would have all fallen one over the other and landed in the Jhula at Tribrindavan, you know, waiting for Swami to sit on the Jhula. And the cherished position was behind the Jhula or beside the Jhula, where you could, if Swami permitted, gently move the Jhula once in a while. So these Thrice Sessions were unique in the sense that they were exclusively meant for the students. They were also exclusive in the sense that you got to see a totally different dimension of Bhagwan. So it was during one such try session, it so happened that apart from the students, Swami would also invite a few of the elders, senior devotees also to come inside Thai Vrindavan, and where everybody would sit and a try session would take place. What is this try session? Sometimes Swami would decide to give a talk. Sometimes he would ask students to get up and talk. So there are several things that used to happen during, or sometimes just prasadam would be distributed silently and we would go back. But it was still a try session, because it was an opportunity to be with the Lord. During one such try session, Swami also invited a few of the lady members, senior devotees, and one among those senior devotee happened to be the Central Trust member. She was a very respected elderly devotee. And she got up, and Swami saw that she wanted to tell him something, so he gestured. He said, please come. Then she said, Swami, I have some good news to share with you. Thanks to your grace, thanks to your mercy, my son has got into a very good position abroad. He is now online to settling down very well. Swami, all this is your grace. Then Swami just said, Manchidi. And then she bent down and she said very firmly, Swami, he was your student. Something very strange happened. Swami turned very sharply towards her and said, he was not my student. There was a stunned silence. So the warden was looking at Swami, because that person was in the hostel. Then the registrar was staring at Swami. Vice chancellor was looking at the warden. Students who knew that boy looked at each other. Everybody knew that that boy did study here. He was a student of this hostel. Everyone knew that. And then the warden came forward and gently muttered in Swami's ear, Swami, he was our student. Swami again looked at the warden this time and said, no, he was not my student. There was, by this time, you know, people understood that Swami was talking about a different dimension of this problem. This is not the routine question answer session that's going on. And then Swami told the registrar, M. Registrar, how do you certify that a person is your student? So the registrar waited. A hint has to be given. Because some lesson is going to be taught, you know, you always better wait for a hint. Because you don't know in what direction the conversation is going to proceed. So then Swami said, what are the qualifications to be called as such a size student? Then the registrar understood, Swami, he has to get admission in the university. Inka, Swami, he has to study and attend the classes, get the required attendance. Inka, Swami, syllabus will be there. He has to study that syllabus, he has to write the exam, and then we will give a certificate identifying that boy or a girl as a student of the Satya Sai University. Then Swami said, Chusera, there is a syllabus, there is a test. After that comes a certificate if you pass the test. Similarly, I too have a syllabus. I too have my conditions. If you sit in this syllabus, study my syllabus, participate in my test, I will test you. After that, if you clear it, I will certify you that you are my student. Until then, you are not my student. This is perhaps the first time in my life that I understood the significance of what a Sai student actually is. Are we all Sai students? Yes. Why are we Sai students? Because we are the fortunate among the thousands who have applied and we have managed to get in here. But are we genuinely going to be called as Sai students by Swami? No. We can call ourselves, we are authorized to call ourselves as students of Swami because we are in the registered roles of the university. But will Swami call us his students? The answer is no. There is going to be a test which Swami is going to conduct. There is a syllabus which he has. And we have to follow that syllabus. We have to be ready to take that test. We have to be confident of clearing the test. Then Swami will tell, this boy is my student, this girl is my student. Until then it doesn't come about. Now this brings a very interesting parable over here. I can be miles away. I can be thousands of kilometers away. I might not even have visited Puttaparthi. I might not even have visited Vrindavan. I still qualify to be called as a Swami student. I can still be called by Swami. This person is my student. So next time when we say that we are Sai students, we are Swami students, let us ask ourselves how much we are doing what Swami's syllabus expects us to do. So let me try to spend some time today and try to first understand what Swami's syllabus is. Now it's very vast. Like students who are writing GATE exam, you know, will know GATE exam. Where do you begin? Nobody knows where to begin. It's so vast it is. No, how do you clear the NEET exam? How do you clear the MCET exam? Oh God, I don't know where to begin. It is so vast. Swami's syllabus also is very vast. You know, but if you go to a guided teacher, he will cut through all that and he will put you in the right direction. Like he'll cut down everything, group everything together, coach you properly so that you can confidently take the exam. Our good fortune is this guide also happens to be Swami himself. So if we go through all his discourses, I can perhaps club together a few points and try to explain and share with all of us what this syllabus is all about. So, the first thing I know about what we can talk about, the first chapter of Swami's syllabus is Dil Mein Ram. Dil Mein Ram, that means the Lord should reside in our heart. So, Dil Mein Ram. Now, if you look at this over here, this heart of man, any spiritual text we read, it is loaded with a great deal of significance. We are not referring to this four-chambered heart with an iota and all those things over here. We are referring to the spiritual heart of man over here. So the spiritual heart of man is given a very important significance and whose emphasis cannot be really stressed more. I remember one incident which was a small anecdote which I came across in one of the books, newsletters of the Satya Sai organizations. A renowned painter was having a painting competition of all, a display of all his paintings, and you know, people were admiring all his paintings. He was such a skilled craftsman, artist. One painting particularly was drawing lots of attention. Everyone was going near that painting and staring at it, but nobody was able to understand what it meant. Now the painting itself was very simple. There was a picture painted of the heart of man, okay, and outside the heart of the man, Jesus Christ was seen putting his hand on the heart like this. It was obvious that he was wanting to enter the heart. So that is a painting. There's a heart of man, and the Lord was waiting outside the heart, trying to get into the heart. Then people were puzzled. They called the artist and said, "Don't you find something puzzling in this photograph?" The artist said, "What?" He said, "See, the Lord is trying to enter the heart of the man, but the door in the heart doesn't have a handle. How do you expect the Lord to open it and enter the heart?" Then the artist said, "My dear man, the heart of man can be opened only from inside. It cannot be opened from outside. So the handle is inside, it's not outside. You cannot open it from outside. So the God will wait near the door, but he cannot open it. We have to open the door from inside and invite the Lord in. Only then he will come. Until then he will patiently wait outside the door." Now that is the significance of the human heart. We have the power to open it. We have the power to invite the Lord in. We also have the power to shut the door and not let the Lord come in. So how we open the door, that remains the entire thing as sadhana. This is what Swami calls a human heart is like a single seat sofa. Either the Lord stays there or the world stays there. Both of them cannot occupy the same sofa. Either the Lord stays there or the world stays there. Who has to stay there? We have the power to decide. I still remember in 1989, when we were going to Kodaikanal, Swami had brought a brand new bus, a Swaraj Mazda. I believe that brand of bus had just been released into the market. And Swami brought that bus, got it here, and he was very thrilled with the program. He was telling, "See, I bought a new bus for you people. All of you can travel very comfortably in that bus. It has air condition, it has a radio." Oh, everything he said, everything was fine. Now, Kodaikanal trips with Swami are something, you know, which is very endearing and very enjoyable. In the sense that he packs the bus with every known quality of eatable and juices. He's so worried, you know, that in the long trip, his students are going to get famished. Now, it had a backflip also. Unfortunately, he expected everything to be finished by the time the next time he saw the bus. And unfortunately, the next time he sees us is in a place where we are supposed to stop for either breakfast, lunch or dinner. How are we going to eat there if we are going to swallow everything in the bus? So, but that's a conundrum which we had to deal with. Swami wouldn't help you there. So the full things were left in the bus, you know, tetra pack, juice packets, murukku, chips, what all things were put there. You didn't hear chips, it's a junk food, you're not supposed to eat it. But when Swami gives it, it becomes prasadam. That's why I said you didn't hear it. So all those things would be there. But one more thing I have to tell you. The same Swami who used to feed us all this junk food also gave us a terrific exercise regime. Kodaikanal Lake, you know, he expected us to walk around the entire lake and come back in half an hour. So you can't walk and come around the whole day. In half an hour you have to walk and come back to Sai Shruti. So the time limit was very strict. So he used to give, he also used to expect. So then what happened was, all the food was being packed. One day before we were supposed to leave, in that evening, Swami called all the students inside, and those of us who were going, there were 32 of us. So all of them, Swami showed, see this, this you must eat at this time, this you must eat at this time, all things he was explaining, nice. And then he said, you know, I got a new bus for you people. You know, all of you can travel very comfortably in that. But there's a problem. See, if all of you sit and all the eatables are loaded in the bus, then where am I going to sit if I come? You know, we got very carried away in our enthusiasm of devotion, and we told Swami, the entire bus is yours. We thought, what a brilliant answer. Entire bus is yours, Swami. You can go and sit wherever you want. Swami's face just fell. The Swami who was smiling and laughing till then, his face just fell. And he just said one word. He said, what will I do with a lifeless empty bus? Why don't you tell me you are mine? Now watch this. Then Swami explained further. He said, if you give me one seat in the bus, I will go to that corner and I will just sit there and travel with you. But if you tell me you are mine, I will travel with each one of you in your hearts. So that is 32 plus 32. That is 64 of us going in the bus. So he is always so eager. That means, just like the painting what I told you, he is always eager, standing there, telling us that I want to be with you, I want to be with you. The only thing that is preventing him from being that is us. There is nothing else that is preventing it. It is us. We are the ones who are preventing from becoming what the good Lord wants. Now, how do you think of God? That's a question. See, people may think, see, there was one classic question which was asked by a student to Swami over here. Once some discussion came up, and then he said, Swami, the hostel and the college schedule is so jam-packed, you know, from morning 5 o'clock till night 10 o'clock, no, only bells are ringing all the time, tang, 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 they're going on ringing, before we can even realize what the previous bell is for, a fresh bell has rung already, and you know, in all the running, we have to stand in lines for the queue, for the bathroom, we have to stand in line for a bath, we have to stand in the line for the college, for the breakfast, everything there is a line, we are running all the time, you know, I don't know where is time for sadhana and thinking of God. Can you help us? Then Swami said, this is something which all of us need to listen. Swami said, who told you you don't have time? You have 24 hours in a day, to be precise, to think of God. Stunning silence. You know, let's piece through all our activity. You know, in Bangalore or Hyderabad or any city you go, half our life goes in traffic. Right? So the remaining half of our life goes in tackling the problems in the office and then at the home. Where are we going to think of God? Some of us even skip our breakfast and bath and sleep, you know, to be on time to meet our commitments. That's a hectic schedule we are having in our daily lives. So this is close to that. So he said, Swami, where am I going to find time to think of God? And Swami said, there are 24 hours to be precise to think of God. So morning when you get up, offer the day to God. Thank Him that you have given me one more day to discharge my duties. When you take bath and clean yourself, think that you are cleaning the temple of the Lord. Think of the Lord once again. When you are having your food, accept it by offering it as a naivedyam. It becomes prasadam. So offer that food to God. Again you are thinking of God. When you are doing your office work, think that this is a duty you are discharging as your humble offering for your salvation to God. You are again thinking of God. So when you come to sleep, think that Swami is standing next to you, putting you to sleep with a warm breeze. Again, you are thinking of God. When you are playing games, think like as if Swami is there in your team. How would you play? With fairness, with love, with compassion, and still the fighting spirit. So, he said, when you have 24 hours to think of the God every second, why are you grumbling? So, instead of grumbling that I am not finding time, you need to come to God in this way. So, you have to convert the situation. So, everything that we do, if we say it is a Brahmarpanam, Brahmarpanam is not food alone. Brahmarpanam basically means this is an offering to the Lord. So everything that we do when we offer to God, it works wonders in the way we see ourselves at coming close to the Lord. So Swami said that this is the how we need to devise our own methods in our daily lives so that we start thinking of God and this Dil Mein Ram concept becomes very, very clear. The second one is Haath Mein Kaam. Dil Mein Ram is over, next comes Haath Mein Kaam. Haath Mein Kaam is about service. So the first one was about sadhana, bhajans. Second one is about service. Such as an organization is founded on these two basic principles, service and sadhana. So service is now coming as a second aspect, Haath Mein Kaam. So Swami actually lays an enormous significance on this concept of service. One interesting question which was asked to Swami was, Swami, if everything is going to be decided by God's grace, why should I do any activity? Now that Bhagavad Gita shloka, karmanyeva adhikarasya, man is born because there is an activity to be discharged. We could have been born as this mic otherwise, or that speaker, or this granite marble floor. So activity is the reason why man is born. The day he decides that or devises a method, convenient argument saying that I don't need to do activity because everything is going to be decided by God, we are no better than any one of these lifeless objects all around us. So the man is born because there is an activity. And when we do our activity, God's grace works from the behind. Now, this is a beautiful answer which Swami gave once. The question here was, Swami, if everything is going to be decided by God's grace, if everything is preordained, why is it that I should do any activity at all? In the Mahabharata, there is a very interesting story. You know, this Pandavas, they were on disguise. They were hiding. Ajnatavas was going on. Okay, they were in the kingdom of King Draupad. That Matsya Bhed contest was to take place the next day. Arjuna had decided that he is going to participate. Only Krishna knew that these five Brahmins in disguise were none other than the Pandavas themselves. So he comes in the night, visits the Pandavas, and he calls Krishna aside and he says, "Oh brother, be very careful how you are going to be in the contest tomorrow. It's a very important contest. Lots of great archers from all over the world are going to come. No, you have to be very careful with the bow. That yantra is very famous. You know, it will be rotating. Don't draw the arrow up till your ear. Please draw it only till the eye. Use only less strength. Put it like this. Don't shake. See the reflection." Arjuna starts getting irritated. He says, "I am such a great archer. Nobody in this world can beat me in archery. For the last 15 minutes, this man is going on trying and telling me how to shoot an arrow." So he gets bugged up and he tells Krishna, "Krishna, wait. If I am going to sit and do everything, what are you going to do?" Then Krishna says something marvelous. He says, "I will do that which you can never do." And Arjuna laughs and says, "What is it that I cannot do?" And Krishna tells him, "I'll make sure that there is no wind. I will make sure that the water is still." Now let's analyze this and see. However great our capability is, however great our might is, there are certain things which we can never control. That is only controlled by God. Can we control nature? Have we been able to stop fire accidents, earthquakes, tsunamis, cyclones? Anything we do, we cannot stop it. Those are in the hands of the Lord. So what did Krishna meant when he says, "I will do that which you cannot do"? That means when we put in a sincere effort, God makes sure that the conditions around us are correctly there to attain the victory. So he gives the conditions, we give in the effort. And the success comes from that. So without the individual effort and without the conditions, you are never going to get success. You can do as much of efforts as you want. If the conditions are not favorable, we are not going anywhere. The conditions may always be there, but if we are not going to put in any effort, nothing is going to happen. Swami's classic example, I will give you every form of dish that you can imagine on your plate and put it in front of you. But unless you use your hand and you use your mouth, that food is not going to get into your body. You cannot sit in front of the plate and say, "Jalebi, come into my mouth, pakoda, come into my mouth." It doesn't work that way. Some work is required here. Some activity is required here. So the secret to success, therefore, is individual effort plus the divine grace. The divine grace is always there. It's the individual effort that is lacking. So when this is nothing but this seva or hatme kaam, which Bhagwan regularly tells us. And when we involve ourselves actively in these activities, now he is always there protecting us and making sure that the condition is right and we do not come to any harm. I remember in 1992, during the summer vacation when Swami would come to Vrindavan and Kodaikanal, I was doing my PhD at that time. So I thought that it would be a right time for me to go to Vishakhapatnam. Nuclear physics laboratories and library in the entire South India, Vishakhapatnam is unbeatable. Because, you know, that is where the concept of nuclear physics began in the entire South India. After Bombay, Vishakhapatnam was the next one. They had a fantastic collection of books and papers which I wanted to refer for my PhD work. So I requested and I prayed to Bhagwan, Swami, in the summer vacation, when you are not here, may I go to Vishakhapatnam and do my literature survey? And Swami said, go. So it so happened that I went to Vizag, and as it happens, people there found out that a student of Swami had come here. And when we came there, he immediately, they asked, would you be willing to give a talk to the Samiti? So I said, yes, I'll be happy to share my experiences with the Samiti, because it gives me also a great deal of happiness. And it so happened that I was speaking. Vishakhapatnam in those days, if any one of you have been to Vishakhapatnam, in those days Vishakhapatnam was a different ball game altogether. In the sense that it was a city that would sleep like a village. Which means after 8 o'clock, nothing is open. You'll be lucky if you find a stray dog also on the road. Everybody would vanish by 8 o'clock. No autos, no buses, nobody. So I had given a talk, and after that discussions went on, and as it happens in most of the satsangs, things went on, and before I knew it was 8:30 already. I had no idea that bus services don't exist after 8 o'clock. So I went and stood in the bus stop and I was waiting, 8:30, 8:45, 9 o'clock, not a single soul is appearing anywhere. I started getting worried. I didn't even know the locality where I was staying because I was new to Vizag, but I knew the hotel's name. So I was just standing there, and suddenly at last one scooter went past with a driver who had his helmet on. Now in those days, anybody deciding to wear helmet, that should have already warned me that this is not the routine job that you are seeing here. So scooter went past, stopped and came back. Then this person removed his visor and he said, not the helmet, he removed the visor. He removed the visor and he said, Sai Ram. I said, 9 o'clock, Vishakhapatnam, desolated street, somebody is selling Sai Ram. It gave me a big boost. I said, Sai Ram, sir. Then he said, didn't you just give a talk in the MVP Colony Samiti? I said, yes, sir. Then he said, didn't anybody tell you that you will not get a single bus after 8 o'clock? I said, no, sir. Then he said, you are lucky I came by. Get in, I'll drop you. So I got in behind the scooter and we were scooting along the road. And that person had a few discussions to make, some points which I made. He wanted clarification. He was offering his opinion. And like that, we were going on and on and on. After about 20 minutes to 25 minutes, he dropped me in my hotel and he went away. I had gone up till the first floor when suddenly I got a shock. Throughout the journey, I had never told this man where I was staying. No one knew. Like a rocket-guided missile, like a laser-guided missile, he had dropped me at exactly the doorstep of my hotel and vanished. I ran down the steps like a madman. Saw on the road, there was nobody there. Road was again empty. So I thanked Swami. I said, it must have been you. I would have been lost if you had not come today. And I went. Time went past. Everything was over. Summer course was taking place. So I came back again to attend the summer course. And Swami was distributing the badges and other things. And he called me inside to distribute. And after everybody left, suddenly he caught my collar and pulled me back. And he said, Emira, watch leda, he said. I said, wow, I'm going to get a watch. I said, no, Swami, no watch, no watch. Gave me a fat rap on my head and said, I'm not going to give you a watch. When you are talking in public, don't you see the clock? I didn't understand. Then he said, just because there's a mic and just because there's an audience, time chusukokunda maatladtara, 8 intiki if I had not come, what would have happened to you, he said. Then everything fell into place for me. So that's why if you would have noticed, one of the first things I did was, the clock is ticking there. And thankfully there is a clock there. But this is not the first time that he used to come and, you know, protect us. Because I was involved with a holy task. I was giving people happiness. I was myself feeling very happy. Every time, you know, you share an experience of Bhagwan, it's almost like the entire incident is flashing in front of our eyes. You know, I'm reliving it. Just like I'm trying to make that experience relive for you once again. So when we get involved in such a sacred activity, what is the reason that Bhagwan shouldn't be standing there and making sure that we are getting the full benefit out of it? And one of the best benefits you can think of is save the speaker. So I got saved that day. So this is how basically he finds that every time we get involved in this activity selflessly, we don't really need to bother about our benefits, our welfare. Swami is always there guarding us. Now that is that environment I was talking to you about. This environment is not just about making the activity a success. It is about our welfare also. But perhaps the best experience I can share with you about what great importance Swami gives to the concept of seva happened in 1986 during the Vice Chancellor's Conference. I believe I have shared this experience several times, but let me tell you, I want to share it once again. Because Swami's idea of seva doesn't get any more clear than this experience. Vice Chancellor's Conference in 1986, the Satyasai Institute of Higher Learning organized this conference. Over 80 Vice Chancellors and the representatives from all over the country came to Puttaparthi to participate in this conference. Idea was, of course, about value education and how to inculcate it into the universities of India. It was a very interesting conference. Several important vice chancellors came, including the two future vice chancellors of Satyasai Institute of Higher Learning, as well as the future chairman of the University Grants Commission. They had also come there. At that time, they had no clue what is in store for them. The Professor Rama Rao is unfortunately no more now. When he came, Swami actually told him, Rama Rao, then he said, Swami, I want to retire because, you know, I have served my tenure. Swami said, no. How can you retire so soon? You are going to become the chairman of UGC. And Professor Rama Rao laughed. He said, oh Swami, I am nowhere near the race. Swami said, but I am telling you, you will become. 3 years later, he was made the UGC chairman. 3 years. And Swami is coolly giving him an apple here and telling him, you are going to be retired. You are not going to retire, you are going to be retired. You have to serve the country. You have to become the chairman of the UGC. And he became. Professor Sampat, who was a vice chancellor of our Satyasai University, was an eminent scientist. He also came to Puttaparthi for the first time with his family during this conference. So there are so many. Professor Unnithan, who later on became the member of the executive council. They were all there for the first time. So it so happened that during that conference, Swami selected 9 of us students and 5 faculty members to take care of all the arrangements. 2 of us were in charge of the guest house, which is there on top of the hill. I think you know it as a Sai Srinivasa guest house now. In those days, there was no Sai Srinivasa guest house. It was just a VIP guest house. So the keynote speakers, there were about 8 of them, they were put up in those guest house. Everyone else was in the rooms inside the ashram below the hill. So 3 of us, 1 faculty member, Professor Jagan Mohan Rao, a very great professor, lot to learn from that gentleman, and we have to be thankful, you know, that Swami brought such teachers to train and teach us. We were really fortunate because we were trained by such teachers. So he was in charge of 2 of us. And there were no mobile phones, there were no ordinary phones also. I'm talking about 1986. So the only way to convey a message was, use your good old feet. Run. Run and keep conveying the messages from one point to the other. So it was at around 10:30 in the morning. Bhajans used to get over by 9:30 in the morning. Swami would go inside and then he would come out. Sometimes he would go out. And this time also he came out, and at around 10 o'clock, we saw one Sevadal huffing and puffing and coming up the hill, and he came and he said, sir, all those students and faculty who are involved with this Vice Chancellor's Conference, Swami has called them to Purushchandra Auditorium. He is giving an interview there. And obviously, both of us boys, you know, we were in our third year undergraduation at that time. We threw all the things. They said, we are about to run. And then Professor Jagan Mohan Rao called us back and he said, where are you going? He said, sir, Swami is giving an interview. We would like to go there. Then he said, just wait and give me a moment. Now this is a place where the keynote speakers are going to come. Swami has chosen the three of us with that onerous responsibility. He has given us that responsibility because he trusts that this place will be looked after properly and his guests will not be coming to any fault. Now with so much of work pending, if you decide to go and attend the interview, would you be selfish or do you think it is correct on your path to do that? Now the way he said that, that's why I said the teacher and the parents play such a critical role. Many people blame the teacher and they say he is not doing a good job. While the teachers blame the parents and say you are not cooperating with us. The fact is that child is like a sapling. A sapling has to be protected from both the sides. One side is the teacher, the other side is the parents. You remove any one side, the sapling is open to attack. So this is not a blame game that we have to play with each other. Unfortunately, that's what is happening in today's world. That's not the blame game. Both of the people play a very sacred role in developing the child. So if the child is growing up in a crooked way, it is not just one factor responsible here. There are several factors at work over here. And it is for us elders to sit back and see what those factors are. The child will not be able to do that thinking. So what happened was, the way he told us, we were thoroughly convinced. We said, yes sir, what you said is right. I think we'll be selfish on our part if we are going to go to the interview, leaving all our work aside. So we'll finish the work. If Swami is still giving the interview, then we will go at that point of time. So obviously by the time we finished, it was 11:15, Swami had finished the interview and he had gone back to his chambers. But we didn't feel bad. For some strange reason, we were very happy, you know, that we had given priority to the task that Swami had set for us, rather than our selfish interest of attending the interview. In the evening, bhajan was from 6 to 6:30 in those days. And at 6:30, whatever happens, Swami would arrive, take aarti and retire. It was like a cesium atomic clock, you know. 6:30 means 6:30, that's it. Swami will come, take aarti and he'll go. You can set your clock to it. So it was at 6:25, then suddenly once again in the evening, some sevadal comes running up. Just in a few hours, the guests would have started to arrive. Sevadal comes running up. He said, sir, there is some movement in the ashram. He said, okay, let it be. There is aarti time, right? So Swami would be talking to somebody. So then, I was on this side of the guest house and the other members on the other side of the guest house. The main entrance to the guest house is in between these two branches. So I was carrying some bed sheets and pillows from this side and going to the other side, fully covered. And I was just looking below the pile in my hand to navigate my way and go to the other side, because nobody is going to come at that time. As I was rushing past the main entrance, I saw two very beautiful soft feet with an orange robe appear right in front of me. I almost collided with Swami. So then I screeched to a stop, pushed the blankets on this side, and I wanted to see, is this really Swami? And Swami was trying to peep from the other side to see who is behind these bed sheets. And we looked at each other. I threw that. I said, Swami. Then he said, oh, Nubba. Then he just looked around. Where are the other two? 6:25. I said, Swami, they are on the other side. Call them. So he called. You know these old iron folding chairs. We didn't have these Neelkamal brand beautiful chairs in those days. These old iron folding chairs. Right? I don't know whether some of you would have seen that. They are out of existence. They are basically retired. So that chair, he just grabbed one, pulled it, sat down on that chair. Old rusted chair. I was ashamed to tell you that is a chair which we had used to stand on and clean some cobwebs also. Swami sat on that. So I told Swami. He said, Amy. I said, Swami, that chair is dirty. Parvalet. He sat. 6:30. Then he started asking, who all are coming, when are they coming? So we told Swami, this is the schedule given to us. This person is coming, that person is coming. 6:35. Then 6:40, Swami is still talking to us. It was perhaps one of the rare occasions in Puttaparthi, Prashantanilayam, where the aarti was not given at 6:30. Then at 6:40, finally he said, aarti time is over, I'll go now. And he went. Just as he was about to go, we were taking a namaskar. Now this is something interesting that happens now. He gave Padnamaskar to all three of us. And then he got up and he went near the door and he said, Intaki nenu enduku vachano telsa meeku. Do you understand why I came at all in the first place? We just looked at each other. No, nobody asks such questions. You know, if he comes, it is fine. You know, why ask, why have you come? Then he came. Then we just looked at each other and we just folded our hands and Swami said, you know, in the morning, when I gave the interview, I watched that all three of you were absent. So when I asked your colleagues, they told us that they are working upstairs, Swami. Lots of work is there, so they are busy working there. So morning you were busy with the work which I had given you and you couldn't come. So evening I came for you. You know, in Telugu there is a song, Nanu Palimpaga Nadachi Vachitiva, Moralalimpaga Nadachi Vachitiva. That means, you know, to grace me you have walked all the way. Where do I count in the scheme of things? To him it did. To him it did. So because he walked all the way, he didn't mind keeping thousands of devotees waiting for the aarti just because he wanted to talk to the three of us. What did we do? Nothing great. We just made sure that the job given to us was given the top priority and not our selfish interest. That is the significance which Bhagavan gives to the concept of service. So let us remember, when we are going for service next time, we don't have to go running after Swami when we are working sincerely. He himself will hunt for us and come wherever we are. All we require to do is a sincere job at hand. So that is the great significance which Swami gives to this service. So dil mein ram, haat mein kaam. The third one is to understand that his word is as powerful as himself. Many times, you know, we are guilty that when Swami says something, oh, Swami doesn't know. I am guilty of it. It may sound shocking, you know, if somebody who has stayed with Swami for so many years can make such a blunder, we are the most guilty of doing it. You know, familiarity unfortunately breeds contempt. Now, when you start getting familiar with Swami more and more, you start thinking more and more that he's one of us. You know, we slip once in a while in realizing in whose presence you are. All Mahapurushas are like that. So when you are with them, you know, you commit the blunder of thinking that he thinks like us, he speaks like us, he walks like us, so he is one of us. No, he is all of this, but he is something much beyond that. That aspect we close our eyes to. So it so happened that many times we see that so many discourses Swami gives. We listen, we go. Nothing happens after that. I still remember in 2006, 7, 8, those times when Swami's physical body started giving way and he would no longer be able to walk properly. He would miss darshans. One day, Swami was asked, Swami, festival is coming, why don't you give discourse? Swami, so sadly, he told them, you know, see, what is the point? From 1960s, I have been giving public discourses. How many discourses I have stood for hours together and given? Even 5 cents worth also has anybody implemented in their lives? It was with such a great deal of sadness that he said that. You know, if you really think of it, you know how much time Swami stands and speaks? 1.5 hours. It's not easy. Consider the fact how much of food he eats. Hardly anything. By the time you sit down and wash your hands and sit down, he has already finished eating. He hardly used to eat anything. Rest, no one knows when he sleeps. But yet he stands for hours together, for day after day he gives so many discourses. Volumes and volumes have been published. But Swami's sadness was that even 5 cents worth of it, and aidu nanalu, Swami said, aidu nanalu means 5 paise worth also has anybody implemented in their lives. For whose sake should I keep talking more and more, he said. So these words of Swami are therefore something very powerful. So when we say that Swami is my guru, Swami is my mother, Swami is my father, Swami is my God, his word also carries the same weightage, it carries the same respect. So when we choose to ignore those words, it is we who are going to suffer, not him. The incident I am going to send now is, I technically call it an electrifying incident because electricity is involved. So, physicists, for some strange reason, you know, we have an affinity to electricity, you know. So, if you have a physicist who tells that I have never got an electric shock, he is lying. So, physicists generally get electric shocks all the time. So, this was not any different. In Puttaparthi, the super specialty hospital was being constructed at that time. So, what happened was, you know, some nice chandeliers would come from all over the world, you know, and they would be put in Poonchandra Auditorium. And Swami would then select the chandelier and say where exactly that chandelier is supposed to be put. I'm telling you actually, when you go to Puttaparthi Hospital or the Brindavan Bangalore campus super specialty hospital, when you see the chandeliers, please remember that Swami physically used to tell which chandelier has to go where. Most of those chandeliers were physically told by Swami, seen and then told where they have to go. Now seen is what I'm going to talk about now. How did Swami see those chandeliers? No, there was a team of two of us there in the Poonchandra Auditorium. So we would open the curtain and you know there was a very interesting way in which we would display the chandelier. You know, we used to keep two bamboo poles crossed like this, another two bamboo poles crossed like this and one bamboo pole in the center, of course at a very great height. And then the chandelier has a central stem. First we used to hang the stem from the top pole and then slowly start building the entire chandelier above the ground with that rope and that pole as a support. So you could say that we were becoming masters at that art, because you know even big chandeliers we could assemble in very record times. By the time we would have assembled over 100 chandeliers by then. Then one day at Swami would retire to his room in Poonchandra Auditorium by 7 o'clock. So at exactly 6:50 one chandelier arrived. So, Brother Dilip and me looked at each other and we said, oh yeah, 6:50 men. So if we start assembling this now, Swami's retiring time will get delayed unnecessarily. We'll do it tomorrow, no? By the time Swami comes on in the morning, we'll assemble it and keep it ready. But Swami was very sharp. So what I did was, I stood on the passage of the door like this and I kept looking at Swami from behind me. They quickly took the curtain and they put it in the room. But Swami's eyes caught it. He said, what happened? I said, so I just went and I just smiled at Swami. Swami said, chandelier ochinda. I said, yes Swami. Then assemble it. So again I smiled at Swami. Then he said, you are worried that my retiring time is come close, right? I'll get late if you sit and assemble it. I said, yes Swami, it seems a small box. So tonight or tomorrow morning we'll assemble it Swami. For tomorrow morning when you are going, it will be ready for you. Then Swami said, chinnade antunnav kada assemble chesi. It's a small one only you are saying, right? So you assemble it. I will watch it. It's okay. So I had no alternative. So I went and told Dilip, Swami wants it assembled. So we quickly ran, opened the curtain and just as we expected, it is a very small chandelier. So I got a brainwave. I said, see, why this bamboo pole and all now is such a small one? Let's do one thing. I'll hold the stem in my hand. You quickly assemble the chandelier. So Dilip said, wow, brilliant idea. We'll save lots of time, right? So quickly I held the chandelier and Dilip started assembling the chandelier quickly. And as we were assembling, Swami came behind the stage at Poonchandra Auditorium with Mr. Chiranjeev Rao. He was there. So he came and he said, Ainda. I said, Swami, Aidunimshal, 5 minutes, it'll get over. Swami said, okay. Just as he was about to go, he turned back, looked at me and he said, Karral me the petti cheste manchidemo, he said. Maybe if you put the chandelier on the poles and assemble, maybe it will be good. I said, no Swami, it's a very small one, I'll hold in my hand, it is okay. Swami said, Nishtam. You see, these are all danger signals, you know, you have to have the brains to really watch out for. You know, but like I told you, Maya is something very powerful, you know. So, every one of us falls for it. So, then Swami said, Nishtam, and he went off. After another 3 minutes, he came once again. More was completed. Swami said, Ainda. And Swami, Rendu Nimshal Swami, Aipotundi. 2 minutes, it will get over. Again, he said, maybe if you put it in that bamboo poles and assemble, it is good. It will be better. I said, no, Swami, it's almost over. Then this time, Swami stared at me. This fool is not going to listen. He is going to stare at me, Nishtam. And he went off. And exactly in 2 minutes, I finished assembling it. I was holding it. So Dilip went and told Swami chandelier is assembled. And Swami came out. And he said, Chiranjeev Rao garu also came out with Swami. And then Swami said, switch cheyandi. Switch was put on, but nobody was watching the chandelier because I started to dance with it. Because somewhere in that rod, there was a loose contact and I was getting the full 230 volts along with the chandelier. So I started shaking. No, Chiranjeev Rao garu sir is looking at me like this, what's wrong with this fellow? Dilip is looking at me and saying, what is wrong with this fellow? Till now he was fine. Swami's reaction was the most perplexing. He held his sides and he collapsed in a chair laughing till tears came out of his eyes. He was having a whale of a time at my expense. So he caught his sides and tears were coming out, and then he wiped his eyes and said, switch you, he said. He couldn't even get the words out. Luckily, Dilip was sharp enough, so he immediately put off the switch. I gave the chandelier, I managed to save it. I gave the chandelier to Dilip and I fell down. Swami came and stood over me like that and he said, Inkokkasari nenu cheppindi vinte neeke manchidi. But he wouldn't let go of this chance. So he said, next time when I tell you something, if you listen, it is good for you. Now see the context. Next time, I'm sure to fail him again, that means. Otherwise he wouldn't use that word. When I tell you something, if you listen to me, the choice is still there with me. I may listen, I may not listen. If you listen to what I said, it will be good for you. So the words were all the time there in front of me. He was warning me all along. I was ignoring the words, because I was concentrating on the 5-foot-4-inch frame. That is where the big blunder comes. Now, as long as we think that Swami is that 5-foot-4-inch frame, then that is where the whole problem begins. He becomes another human being with a human body, susceptible to all kind of emotions and other kind of fallacies which the human body is capable of committing. But the real Swami was never that. He was never ever that. He was something beyond that. And those fortunate few who saw that, knew that when Swami's word comes, it is as powerful as Swami himself. So this is a very important thing for us to remember in our sadhana, that when Swami's words come, they are very, very powerful. They are as powerful and have to be given as much of weightage as we would give Swami himself. Now these are the four pointed principles of Swami's syllabus. Dil mein Ram, Haath mein Kaam. Then we also have, his word is no different from him, the three important ones. And when we follow all these carefully, like I said, he creates an environment protecting us. Now a part of a guru, whomever we accept as a guru, it may be X, Y, Z, when we say he is our guru, the guru assumes the responsibility of making sure that he is protecting us in our path. Now see, this is like teaching a child to walk. The mother or the father is always holding the child to walk. The hand is held. Right? Even when the child has started, let us say, cycling, the father is always there behind the cycle. He's always there behind the cycle. Even though he's not holding the cycle, he's very much close by. In case the child stumbles, he is there in a second to hold the cycle and protect the child. So a guru is exactly like that. So when we follow his instructions, when we follow his syllabus carefully, he is always there protecting us. So when I say protecting, at the beginning of the talk, I had very clearly said that for each one of the people, Swami maintains a special relation. Which means each one of us is capable of committing a different kind of a fault, and the Guru has a lesson plan for each one of us, which is unique. A lesson plan which will work for X will not work for Y. And it is a foolishness on our part if we think there is a universal grand lesson that will work for everyone. It doesn't exist. Each one of us has our own lesson. Syllabus is the same. But the way the teacher chooses to teach a student changes based on the understanding ability of the child. Bhagwan was no different. I would like to share a very interesting incident in Shirdi Sai Baba's life. Wherein, you know, when a devotee comes to Shirdi Sai Baba and tells, Master, I'm suffering from violent stomach upset, cure me. And Shirdi Sai Baba takes a handful of peanuts and gives him and tells, eat this, it'll get fine. No, a doctor would get a heart attack. Whoever gives groundnuts, you know, to cure a stomach upset, it'll make it worse. But that person bounced back. The next day he came back and he said, Swami, it worked, thank you. And another devotee got the same stomach upset. He said, oh, Sai Baba gave peanuts to that person, right? Maybe I should also eat it. And he ate it and he landed in the hospital. So is the problem with the peanuts or is it the problem with the guru's command? Neither. It is not the groundnuts that did the job there. It is the power of the hand that gave the groundnuts to the devotee that did the job. So the power comes there. So we see here that the instrument changes, the lesson changes, but neither the instrument nor the lesson will work unless the teacher who does it is putting in his effort, and that is where a guru comes from. Many times it was, some of us were guilty, once again, of asking, Swami, why is it that this person is getting that person is getting that, you are doing this for this person, you are doing that for that person, why is it that you are not doing this for me? That's the whole truth is we fail to understand that what works for one person will not work for the other person. And Swami sometimes uses the same incident to drive home two different lessons to two different people of two different mindsets. The child's mindset is different, so the teacher adopts a different approach. I would like to say, this is a very hilarious incident actually, this happened. Some of those in this audience may have heard of Mr. Murri Channa Reddy, the former chief minister of the state of Andhra Pradesh. He was a devotee of Bhagwan who would regularly come to Puttaparthi, and you know, he had a great faith and respect for Swami. And he was a very powerful politician, very powerful politician. And obviously when powerful politicians come, lots of ancillary people surround him for various requirements of theirs to get their jobs done. This was no different occasion. So Channa Reddy Garu was put up in the green room of the Poonchandra Auditorium, which was used as the VIP guest house in those days. And Dr. Shauri and two of us students were put in charge of looking after the welfare of Mr. Channa Reddy. So Mr. Channa Reddy had gone to the mandir. He had finished having an interview with Bhagwan. He had come back and he had gone into the room. And we were cleaning up, and suddenly somebody came and banged on the door so loudly like the door is going to come out of the hinges. Very rudely. So I gently opened the side door. I didn't open the main door. I opened the side door to see who it was. There were two sevadals standing there pleading with a so-called politician. And you know, they're pleading with him not to go near the door and bang the door like that. But this person was not paying any attention to them. So then I came from that side and he said, Sairam sir, what can I do for you? He said, open the door. I have to see Channa Reddy. I have to see the chief minister. I said, sir, the chief minister is inside his room. Moreover, sir, you have your slippers on with you. So this is a place which we consider very holy because our master walks in this place. Please remove the slippers and come. Meanwhile, I will tell Mr. Channa Reddy that you have arrived. You can please sit here. I will inside. There is a waiting room. You can sit there. I will go and tell the chief minister and come. He pushed me aside. He pushed me aside and he said, I'm telling you only. Move aside. Don't come in my way. He walked into Poonchandra Auditorium with the chappals. Again I ran behind him and I told, sir, if you are finding it difficult to go and remove your chappals, please give me your slippers. I will carry it and I will put it outside. He just again walked over me, didn't even respond to what I said. It was almost like I was not existing. And he very rudely went past me. So I told him, that, sir, please give me your slippers, sir. I will keep it outside for you. That all this was being watched by the other student who was a hefty person. And he was standing near the second door through which this politician had to go past. He didn't move, he just stood like this, blocking the way. He was a bulky person, difficult to get past him, even if you want to. So this politician came up against him and he said, move. But this person had seen everything, the way he was treating me. And he said, sir, will you go outside and remove your slippers or shall I complain to the chief minister about your indiscipline? But that shook him. Now if Channa Reddy Garu finds out that he has played in indiscipline in Sai Baba's place, he's gone. But that shook him. So he ran outside, removed his slippers and he came back. So the incident was over. Mr. Channa Reddy went away. One day was over, 2 days was over. And we were sitting outside. And this second student was a bhajan singer. So he's inside the bhajan mandir, but I was sitting outside. So Swami came out at 8:45 and he looked around. General Chibbar was sitting next to me on the upper portico. And he told Chibbar, do you know that Channa Reddy had come? He said, haan Swami, we saw him, he had come. Do you know something very funny happened? Then Chibbar said, Swami, what happened? Then Swami looked at me and said, tell him. I said, what funny? What funny thing? Then I said, Swami, Chippul Ra Chippulu, slippers man slippers. Slippers funny. Then I said, oh, whatever, let me tell that incident. You know, we'll analyze later about, you know, how slippers became funny. Then I told, sir, this is what has happened, everything has happened. And Swami said, what did you tell? I said, Swami, I folded my hands and I told him, sir, please give me your slippers. I will put it outside and come back. What did he say? I said, Swami, he was very rude. He just pushed me aside and he walked off. And Swami looked at the elders there. You see my students? They're so humble. They're so simple. Even though other person is shouting at them, all kind of invectives, even then they are so polite, they are so calm. That is why I like my students a lot. Then they all said, oh yes Swami, students are really good. Then Swami looked at me and he said, but Bangaru, I will tell you one small bit of advice. Then I said, Swami, with everybody, every time if you are going to be so soft and speak so tenderly like this, this world will swallow you like an apadam. No, once in a while you have to stand up and you have to stubbornly and strongly tell, you know, what your opinion is. Otherwise, you know, you will get washed over. I said, yes, Swami. Drama scene 2. Inside the bhajan hall. Now those poor souls had no idea what is happening outside. Because, you know, they are inside. And they were busy tapping their drums and tablas and all, you know, getting ready for bhajan. Swami went inside and there were some VIPs there also. Some elders were there waiting for the bhajan. And Swami asked him, do you know Channa Reddy had come? They said, yes Swami, we had seen him. You know, something very funny happened. What thing, Swami? And Swami looked at this boy and said, tell them. So even he didn't know. Swami told, chappulu. So he told him about the slippers. Then Swami said, what did you tell? I said, Swami, I stood there. I told him, are you going to remove your slippers or shall I complain to the chief minister? That man got scared, Swami. He ran and removed his chappals. Then Swami looked at the elder and said, you see, this is why I like my students. Wait, more is coming. And he looked at them and said, this is why I like my students. You see, they know whom to speak and where to speak and how to speak. They will speak correctly where it is required. Then they said, yes, Swami. Then he looked at other men and said, but Bangaru, I'll give you one piece of advice. Ain't Swami. See, with everybody, if you are going to snap and shout and yell like this, people will not like you. You know, once in a while, you should speak softly and tenderly also. Everything happened in 10 minutes. In 10 minutes, the same incident was transformed into two different lessons for two different kind of personalities so that they will keep it in their mind. Now that is what I meant when I said that he is a master at teaching us, giving us the right medicine for every kind of ailment. See, we are all spiritually diseased in the sense that, you know, we have lots of issues with our spiritual journey. Anger, hatred, jealousy, irritation, all these are, you know, spiritual disease symptoms. And you know, the doctor who can cure it is only your guru. So the symptoms may be the same, but the physiology of the person differs, and the guru gives the medicine which is suiting the physiology. Symptoms, yes, but it also suits the physiology. So this is an interesting thing that we should know about how he actually protects us from all these kind of dangers. Now one question I have often heard is, in our journey of following the syllabus, there are certain obstacles we should constantly watch out for. Now these obstacles are going to come to us. Each one of us will definitely face them. It remains our responsibility to see how to go over it. So, why is it that we should be so careful about these kind of dangers? I remember once, sports meet was going on. Swami used to come for the sports meet regularly. Practice sessions, I meant. So in one particular sports meet, the Patti campus had put up a small episode, which is a part of the whole program, in which, you know, we were talking about human exploitation. That was the theme that was being presented. So what, I was the culprit in charge of that scene. So I thought, see, the best way to do it is we will show a scene from ancient Greek and Roman days where slaves were employed, a fellow human being exploiting another human being. And then we will shift to the modern day where how the leaders exploit and, you know, do things for publicity and, you know, not actually mean what they are doing. So it met with the approval of all the team members and everything was over. And we even got, you'll be surprised to know that the person whom we hired as the driver of the VIP's car in that scene was Channa Reddy Garu's grandson. Okay, we made him act. He was a student doing his MBA. And you know, see, the beauty of that family was like this. See, they didn't mind. Wow, my grandfather is the chief minister. How do you expect me to act as a driver of a car? No, he happily did it. Never gave us any trouble. Because here, he was a student like any one of us. So, that scene was over. Everything was over. Generally, after the sports meet is over, Swami would call all the people. And you know, he would discuss the situations. He would make very nice comments. And you know, he would give lots of chances and opportunities. This time he just stopped talking to us. After this entire presentation was over, he just stopped talking to us. You know, 3 days come in between. After the sports meet is over, there are 3 days in between, you know, wherein the, Swami would discuss these things, and comes the Dasara Vijay, the Sankranti Pongal day, on which the prize distribution takes place and things wind up. This entire 3 days Swami refused to talk to us. Then prize distribution was over, some of us senior students, we went and caught Swami and we said, "Swami, something has upset you." Then Swami said, "No, nothing." Then we said, "No, Swami, you are not talking to us, something is upset." Then Swami caught this incident, this episode, and he said, "Who did this?" So I came forward. I said, "Swami, I was responsible for it." Then Swami said, "What did you depict?" I said, "Swami, like this and like this." I told him how olden days it was the slaves and nowadays it is the common man exploiting the common man by virtue of their position and power. Then Swami said, "What is the solution you offered? What is the solution you offered?" I got what Swami was hinting at. See, just go through this entire episode. See, we wasted so many resources, so much of our time in presenting a problem which everyone knows. Then Swami said, "I want my solutions students not to recreate the problem. I want them to create the solution." And on that day, you only recreated the problem. You presented a problem which everyone knows. Where is the solution? What is the difference between you and the person outside this institution if you are not talking of the solutions? You are only recreating the problem. So I would like to extend this a little bit to all of us and just see for ourselves. See, we spend hours and hours talking about many things on this earth. This is like this, that is like that, this is not good, that is not good, and all of these things. But how many of us spend time in discussing a constructive solution of which we can be a part of? It is likely that we may not be able to solve the problems of this universe of the world. How about a local area? Let us start with a small local area. Instead of discussing this is like that, that is like that, I remember some of us, you know, we used to tell every time in one particular room, the light shoes will always be on. Now, when the students would go for college or darshan, light would always be on. How many of our times we told the students, how many of our times we used to find them, it never used to work. So one day, you know, a senior amongst us in the hostel, he said, "See, if they are not listening, why should we continue, you know, with this thing? Let us put it off. What difference does it make whether they put it off or we put it off? Energy has to be saved." So every time they would go, one of us would quietly come and put off the switch and go. After 2 months, the students themselves realized, and they were ashamed. They said, "See, our teachers are putting it off for us, you know, maybe we should put it off." And they fell in line. So constructive solution is the need of the hour. Let us not waste our time in discussing and judging others. So this is where I bring to the biggest stumbling block in the path of a person in his evolution or her evolution, and that is judging others. We spend so many hours judging others, you know, this person is like that, that person is like that. Who gives us the right to judge anyone? The Jesus Christ's very famous statement is that, "Let him cast the first stone who has never sinned." So we cannot judge others because within ourselves there is so much of lacuna still pending. So judging others is a big problem. I remember when the final year students, when we passed out of our course, Swami would give us an interview. So when he called us for an interview, one of the students got up and he said, "Swami, you have given us so much of love and so many things for so many years. Now we are going out into the outer world. Tell us how we can work to change the world." And then Swami said, "Don't even bother attempting it. You are never going to succeed. Why do you think an avatar comes? Why do you think Mahapurushas come? It is their job to change the world." "Then what do we do?" Swami said, "You transform yourself. You transform yourself so that 5 others see you, they get inspired to live a life like you." The second thing is, I would say, if I'm right, 90% of the problem in this world of anger, hatred, jealousy, other kind of dangers come when we start comparing ourselves to the others. Everyone you see begins because we compare ourselves to someone. So when we compare ourselves to someone, we start questioning, why is it that person has two cars, I have only one? Think of the person who doesn't even have a bicycle. Why is it that that person is able to construct three houses, I'm not even able to build one, I'm living in a thatched roof, you know, on rent? Why is it that then from here we go to the next mistake? What is it? What kind of God is this? I'm working so hard here, I don't get anything. That person cheats, lies, he robs, he is getting everything. That kind of a, the train of thought slowly gets into that. Now that it won't stop with just comparison. The pity is it goes from comparison mode to criticizing God himself. So that is a big danger we do. Let's take the route of individual transformation, which will automatically result to the societal transformation, and each one of us therefore helps each other to reach the divine lotus feet. So this is what I wanted to share with you. I would like to once again, most importantly, I never said thank you to Bhagwan. I have not learned to say that, because I don't think you ever say thank you to your mother and father. You always are grateful for what they have done. Swami also, it's like that for me. He's more than my mother and father. So I'm always grateful for whatever he has given me. So this is one of those blessings for which, Swami, I express my gratitude to you. And Sairam to all of you. And let us all travel on this path of our spiritual progress. And make sure that we are following Swami's syllabus. And we become eligible to be called really as his students. Thank you. And Sairam.
Amazing grace, how sweet the sound that saved a soul like me. I once was lost, but now I'm found, was blind. The hour I first believed.